And here we are, second episode, the Drunk Tank Podcast. It's me again, Stephen Feldman.
Cheryl Pittman.
Oh yeah, my co-host Cheryl's here. We've already had several beverages, which is great.
Yeah.
We hope that you're doing that too. We have a very, very special guest with us here today.
Somebody's coming in?
Yeah, he's... He's special in the sense that he's got to wear a helmet.
Yeah.
Local radio DJ Wes Nessman is here with us.
Wes, that sounds so underwhelming, man.
He has so many accolades.
We're gonna amp it up.
I can't even begin to start. He says he's in charge of 6 radio stations here in town: FMX, Awesome 98, Kiss FM, Lone Star FM. He's been in the game for 38 years. He also works closely with us at Laugh Hub City. The host of the Lubbock Laugh Off, and kind of the father of the Lubbock Laugh Off. It was your brainchild.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. Do you want to just like dig down into that?
Yeah, let's start there. Let's start where we all meet.
I had a place called the Freaky Tiki Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was a tax write-off.
Oh
yeah.
We had Nightmare on 19th Street. We had some leftover money. We were going to open a place in Austin. We heard another place was opening, so we felt like we had been, you know, cock-blocked. And we said, okay, what are we going to do? Well, we like to drink. Let's open a bar.
Tiki-themed bar, which
you know,
was cool.
I've since sold the bar, and we are opening a place in Austin in the next couple of years. But at the Tiki, I was so proud to be able to book comedians, plus it was the perfect room for it. I mean... If you ask me, I've been around comedy clubs and comedians my whole life, and then the setup was just great for comedy.
It really was. There was lots of visibility. We stood in the corner in front of a giant tiki.
And you didn't need a whole bunch of room for comedy.
No, you just stand there with a microphone. It was great. Super small stage, but yeah, perfect for comedy.
This is what, 3-4 years ago, right?
I guess so. I would say maybe like 2 or 3, but I'd...
Okay,
weird time frame.
The point being is the comedians here did not quite have their shit together.
Oh yeah,
not yet.
I can believe that.
Okay, now I'm gonna stop right here and say that I am so incredibly proud of the comedians and the way they have developed in this town. It blows me away.
Oh, well, thank you, Wes.
As somebody who has worked with local bands his whole life, you always hope that they would have that kind of dedication or that kind of community that the comedians have here, they never have.
No, so musicians hate each other because they're all trying to get money and undercut each other and
so it was
steal
venue. That I was dealing with my whole life. So to see the comedians do this, it does mean something to me, and it is very special to me.
And I have a point on that. It's just like I'm fairly new to everything. So I have like when you guys talk about like all these old places and stuff, like I have no idea or frame of reference what's going on. But just the community and the way people, like even Steven gave me pointers, you know, JJ, Caleb, like just reaching out and just trying to make me better as a comedian. And we have a really good community.
Well, it's not just that. It's also the fact that so many of you guys get out 4 or 5 nights a week.
Yeah,
we're working hard.
It's dedication.
There's a cool thing about this too, though, that a lot of people don't do. There's that second stammer. Oh, man. I got it early in the episode.
I don't know what that means.
Anytime people stutter or stammer, we have to drink.
I stammer it on the podcast, yep.
So anyways, I noticed that all the comedians had like 2 or 3 great minutes, but that was about it. And then, believe it or not, Dave Longren of all people.
Shout out, Dave.
Dave is known for doing crazy, stupid stuff.
Yeah, he's insane.
Unlike,
I love him.
Not unlike Steven, which is one of my favorite things about Steven, too. And some nights, instead of doing comedy, he would just ask for audience questions or write something down or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different type of talent, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, he would just scream the F word a bunch of times, and it was usually pretty funny, but
he was yokoing it.
World of Beer, he went up one night and for like 3 minutes he just went, fuck you, God.
He was so
mad. The whole thing.
He was so mad at God.
Yeah.
Hey, it works though on so many levels.
So anyways, I got the idea to put this together as a little comedy competition so that people could bring their best of their best and that we could grow it. And you know what? It's interesting. It's one of those synchronicity or synergy things. Other people have had this idea before. I haven't seen it expressly like we do it, but I've seen things that are a lot like it.
Similar.
Or similar.
And the format is suitable to Lubbock comedians specifically because, like you said, we have a lot of new people coming in, and sometimes all they have is 3 minutes, and it's cool to bring your top 3 minutes that are, you know, gold and do
and
3 minutes
of comedy.
We refined it because if you remember, the roast was one of the rotating questions and before we decided to make it part of everyone.
Oh, yeah. And for people who don't know, the Lubbock Laugh Off is a six-comedian competition with six rounds where there's one round of comedy for 3 minutes, four rounds of improv for 30 seconds each, and then the final round is a roast where we kind of let people go crazy, but you get to roast each one of the other comedians. So that's what I'm talking about.
It's once a month.
It's crazy, man. And it's funny, the last two roasts, there actually really is a law in Texas that, you know, if somebody swings on you or whatever, they have, quote unquote, agreed to combat. And you can beat their ass without without ramifications.
Oh, that's good. I could have totally wailed on somebody.
Well, that's what we did the last two roasts. The last two roasts, the people who were supposed to be roasting each other stepped outside and picked on the headliner and or me. So we brought the headliner and me back to go ahead and slam the shit out of people. Because
suplex.
I come up there, believe it or not, I'm loaded. I got something for every single person up there. If you don't say anything about me, you're never going to hear what I have to say. But if you say something about me, I'm going to come back strong.
Well, that's one of my things that I miss about doing the show.
I'm like, I'm probably never going to say anything about you, so I just want to know what you have for me.
I don't think you should, because I got some pretty good ones.
No.
One of the things me and Wes would do is before the
show. I love getting roasted. Right.
Yeah, well, before the show, me and Wes would sit down and I'd be like, hey, listen to what I got for the roast. Because he's going to hear him anyway and he's not competing. So I'd usually tell him some of my roast jokes and he'd be like, oh, that's good, but what if you added in this? And I'd be like, all right. And I'd jot it down.
I love that.
Cheater.
You know, oh, yeah, definitely was. But hey, you know what? You got to buddy up with the host of the competition.
I'm just joking.
I said Joe Cash 12 jokes for this last one.
No,
I only used one of them, but yeah. It was pretty
I used
good.
One of JJ's.
Well, there's no edge to bumping up
but
against the host and buddying with the host because the host doesn't determine the winner. It's an audience participation thing.
Right.
So
exactly.
I learned that long ago from Battle of the Bands, man. You do not judge, man, because everybody will end up freaking hating you. Because okay, look,
we used to judge
comedians there. That means that 5 out of 6 people are going to hate you at the end of the night. Mm-hmm. So let the audience deal with that shit.
Well, we used to have guest judges in the early laugh offs. I remember we had like a little panel of 3 judges and they would help decide. Well, and then we nixed that pretty quickly. And then there was an audience participation vote that one time.
And vocally, it's hard to determine.
Participation, you know?
I'm sorry?
You actually were the one that pushed for the audience participation.
Because Steven's a genius.
Well, and it was cool because I remember we had a laugh off with Austin Metter. Shout out Austin Metter. I guess we tied. We had a panel of judges and me and him tied. And so we went into a sudden death 1 minute of comedy.
We only did that one time.
One time, because it's never been a tie before.
Right.
And I think Austin thought that he was going to get 30 seconds, so he went up there and blew his load real quick. And then I go up there and finessed a pretty lengthy joke for as long as I do jokes. You know, they're usually pretty quick, short quips. And then I hit him with like 4 or 5 back-to-back-to-back and had him roaring, and then did the laugh-o-meter.
That's just amazing to me to be put on the spot like that to say, all right, you've got 1 minute left because I know you already used your best stuff during your first 3 minutes.
I would die.
Yeah. But yeah, to be funny for 1 minute is a lot harder than being funny for,
let's say,
5 or 10 because you have time to build. But
it's not just that. We both know that on a lot of occasions, we've lost momentum when we went to the judging thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to try to bring people up to do comedy after you've lost that momentum is a really risky move, and it worked for us that one time.
Yeah, well, I won that show, so I'm like, yeah, that was a good way to do that.
Well, we've talked about the laugh off. Wes, we want to talk about you. And so kind of what were your influences? What got you into radio?
Oh, geez. You know, I have a friend. I'm sorry that every story starts with something that's a little overwrought or a little overdrawn.
No, we love it.
I got a friend, Dale Dudley, who is a legend in Austin radio.
Okay.
And he's on KLBJ FM. And as Dale and I have discussed, because Dale and I used to be on the morning show together, Dale always wanted to be on radio. Myself, I always wanted to be around music.
Okay.
I don't... I want to say that I don't give a shit whether I'm on the radio or not. I just wanted to be surrounded by music and be in that kind of environment. And I had done some dead-end jobs and bounced around or whatever. We can do all those stories some other time. But one night, you know, FMX had come on, and it had only been on like 3 or 4 months. And it was like a Sunday night, and I heard somebody really shitty on the radio. Yeah. You guys don't know what really shitty on the radio means. These days, even the newbies are polished as heck before they ever come on.
He was probably like, I forgot what I was going to say. You guys aren't listening anyways.
Whatever. So I started applying, and I started applying, and started applying, and finally they put me on. And of course, I had no friggin' idea what I was doing. My only previous experience was I worked the speaker stand at the swap meet in Los Angeles. La Mirada, California. Now, swap meet's like a flea market, right? And I worked the speaker stand, and I would read announcements, like, if you've lost a blonde-haired child, you know, and this is me at like 14, 15 years old, all right? And also people would come by and I would talk about what was in their space. And the funny thing is here I'm 14, 15 years old. Okay, what was the number one thing at the flea market in the 70s? Head shop shit.
Okay,
Songs,
people pipes. Were bribing me with bongs and stuff. They'd say, all right, here, you know, I don't want to come back here every hour. Here's a little something for you and your friends. Take this bong or whatever and read my ad every hour. And I'd go,
oh, shit.
So the funny thing is I supplied a whole neighborhood with fucking paraphernalia back when paraphernalia was illegal. All my friends had these bongs that had like 3 twists on the sides and aquarium motors hooked up and all this crazy shit, because back then people didn't even know how weed really worked, and they somehow thought that an extravagant pipe would enhance their buzz, you know. And these days people just get a little piece of ceramic and that's it.
So you've had the voice since you were a kid.
The voice. You know what? It's like I said, man. You know, on the pre-show, I was talking about impersonating people. You know,
yeah.
George Carlin, he'd do the hippy dippy weatherman, or he would do his weather guy or whatever. And I actually also remember after I started the speaker stand, one day in class, we always rotated who would read the school lunch menu.
Oh, and nice.
It came my turn, and I did it in total announcer voice. Yeah. And I ended up being the school menu guy from then on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Day. Because I would read in all these fake Don Pardo kind of voices.
Yeah.
Like, it's Salisbury steak, you know, kind of like that.
And, well, I mean, you say that thing about your voices. I've actually noticed, you know, I can tell that you have a different voice for whatever job you're doing. And you can, you know, when you're on the radio and you're doing your morning show, it's like, okay, that's Wes and that's his natural voice, which you have a very distinctive voice. We can always recognize you even if you tune in halfway through. But like when you do an ad, I'm like, oh, that's my friend Wes.
Yeah.
And it's different.
Right.
It might just be a subtle difference. It's not super.
Yeah, but see, you guys do the same thing.
Well, absolutely.
Okay. I change my voice to suit the presentation of the thing that I'm trying to do. You guys do the same thing when you tell the joke. So it's really not that special. It is a mild fringe version of just acting.
And yeah,
that's all it is.
I kind of want to hear you do like a whispery Jim Gaffigan voice where he's like, no, she didn't.
I don't know.
Cheryl's got this weird thing that she likes guys to do these sexy voices.
What is that? That's that thing where they talk at night. Yeah. What is it called? The AMSR or whatever? You know, some people are making tapes where people do weird things like opening
Well, and
packages.
It's just like... Like the voice is like a turn on.
Exactly that.
It's late
night jazz radio with so and so.
No, it's not that. But you know Jim Gaffigan, he tells a joke and then he does the like little like voice of the people
around
him.
Yeah, off the side.
Yeah.
You know, I can do.
He's
all
not
that
supposed
stuff.
To say that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mainly like to do that kind of stuff over music and stuff because I get self conscious and it's crazy because I'm actually, and I can't cure myself of this. I can do really good impersonations for about 10 seconds.
He stammered.
And then
he stammered.
Yeah, I did. And then I lose confidence in the accent or the impersonation, and then I drop it real quick.
I can feel that, because I can do, like, Lois from Family Guy or, you know,
there is not certain a single ones. Thing I could do if you put me on the spot.
But you have to do it naturally.
But sometimes I'm like listening to a commercial and be like, you know, the guy that plays Picard or whatever the hell his name is. I can't
Jean-Luc.
Remember. I wish I had the talent of being able to do that because
I
don't.
And
I can no, I don't. I can do it for like 10 seconds and that's it.
Well,
like,
I can't even do them a little bit. You've seen my act. I do like little impersonations where I'm like, okay, Snoop Dogg. He sneezes a chisel like that's it's a dumb joke, but it's like I can't do impersonations of anybody.
Oh, Peter.
And I get into trouble for that, especially with local musicians.
Really?
Impersonation and covers and stuff like that are really one of the lowest forms of art. And this is coming from a guy who you didn't know this about me. For better than a decade, probably longer than that, I was in local bands. I opened for pretty much every B-level grunge band there ever was.
Sweet.
What are some of your band names, if you don't mind? We might have to go search for you.
You're gonna love my band names because near the end, we would come up with a band name and we'd go, oh shit, we gotta go form a name around this band. My very first, and that's one thing I'm proud of, is every band that I've ever had did perform live in multiple places. It wasn't a series of wannabe tries. We got it done.
Good.
My very first band was Zip Gun and the Pistol Whips.
Nice.
Zip Gun and the Pistol Whips.
I love
shout
some
out.
Pistol whipping.
All right. Believe it or not, the next band was The Tools. The name later becoming popular from another band.
Right.
Tool. We were The Rogues. Okay.
I like Rogues.
And then we were Foad. Anybody, do you understand the reference?
Pho?
Foad, F-O-A-D.
No.
Fuck off and die.
Oh, Foad. Okay, okay.
Right. That's old school, man. I'm too young for that.
And I want to make sure we were Bad Opie because one time we were at press time and an entertainment paper wanted our name and we hadn't named the band yet. And my lead singer looked like Opie from the Andy Griffith Show.
So you named your band Bad Opie?
Bad Opie was in one of our names.
That's awesome.
Okay, later on, you'll love this. We performed under the name The Vagges.
Nice.
Yeah,
I personally love it.
We performed under the name Pony Wings.
Oh,
and
I like Pony Wings.
We were also going to do a tribute to our own band Pony Wings called Horse Feathers. We would just do stupid shit like this.
Horse Feathers.
And my last band, I actually let my grandson name it. And we were a band that played nothing but Halloween covers to play out at the Halloween park. And we were the Repulsive Fire Zombies. Because I let my grandson.
That's sweet.
Repulsive Fire Zombies.
I mean, that's a pretty good name for a kid.
Yeah, I mean, a Halloween band. It's not like anybody was asking for us or anything anyways. We just get up there and we play scary songs, you know, Werewolves of London and Brain Stew and
so
stuff like that.
Let's talk about that, like Nightmare on 19th. Mm-hmm. So how did that come to be? How did that become a thing?
This is where everything gets, and fortunately you guys have given me a drink or two because on the way over here I said to myself, I'm not going to get into this, but I'm going to get into this.
All right, cheers.
Sorry.
Here we go.
Cheers. Okay. Cheers for...
You're wearing the shirt, man. You've got the Nightmare on 19th shirt on right now.
Yeah, show the camera.
Okay, this is where things get serious for about 1 minute, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I had a critically ill daughter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. She's passed away. She was only supposed to make it to 3 or 4. But we took her till she was 14, right, dear?
13.
Which is a testament to us. We put everything we had into it. But part of the way along the way, we went, this situation that we're in is not sustainable. Because the way to make money in radio is to move around and move up. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We couldn't do that. We had strings of specialists.
Mm-hmm.
We had a constantly sick daughter. We couldn't do anything. And I thought, it's Hail Mary time. I got to throw a Hail Mary pass. And every year, people would call up to the radio station asking where the haunted houses were. And the few haunted houses that were around were really, really flaky. Like, you would go there on Friday night, and they'd say, oh, not enough actors showed up tonight, so we're not going to do it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we started doing the haunted house thing, and we charged it up on cards and all that good stuff, and that's how it all started. It was a Hail Mary pass is what it was.
Yeah. Well, I've been to your haunted house out there. And it was actually my first time in a big, large-scale haunted house. And it seemed like it was something out of the area. It seemed like a production that was big city. Like, if you would go to Austin to see something like that, or Dallas, or Houston, or San Antonio.
That is one of the compliments that really hits me right here. I hear it all the time, but anytime I hear that particular compliment, it just says stuff that I can't even, it's amazing to me. Because I hear that quite often. They're like, whoa, I cannot believe this is in Lubbock.
Well, aside from the production value, like, the actors as well, everybody was scary. We were scared, you know? It's a genuinely cool thing to do. And it was my first experience with one, but my expectation of it was much lower going into it because of the fact that I grew up here and I know how people make stuff here. So that's definitely one of your artistic masterpieces, in my opinion.
You came into it, what, year 10? You know,
yeah.
The first time you saw it, we'd already been doing it 10 years.
Well, and I've always known about it, and it's always been one of those things. Like, my parents, when we were kids, would hang up wires across the garage and hang up black sheets of plastic.
Right.
And they'd create a little maze where you could walk through.
I love that, man.
And it was
your
Halloween.
Your parents are awesome.
Halloween was a big thing for, yeah, shout out Mom and Dad. It was a big thing in our family, but I never thought that anything.
I never thought
that anything like that would exist here, you know. And it's weird because it's often this area where you don't go because
right.
It's right there next to that park.
You actually have to have people park near the front to tell people, "Oh, keep going. You're not gonna believe it when you finally get back there." You gotta get back there.
Well, yeah, because you're right there by the. It's stages. What is that venue out there?
The Pavilion,
the Lone Star Pavilion.
Yeah.
Okay, the interesting thing is we were actually supposed to be underneath the Lone Star Amphitheater.
Ooh, that would have been cavernous.
The whole story of how we came together and everything. There are all kinds of catacombs underneath there. And I can take
you down
there
somewhere,
and it will freak you the shit out, dude.
I want to go.
I mean, it is real bad, and it smells like hobo piss and raccoons fucking.
Oh, yeah.
It is horrid, man.
Well, and yeah, and so Halloween's already passed, obviously, but you do have the new
Yes, we're
Valentine.
Open February 8th and 9th.
February 8th and 9th. Well, nice.
It's a great little date night thing. In
Bloody Valentine.
Yeah,
of course.
You know, there is so little to do in this town, you know, for people. And you would think it would be enough, but there's just not as much to do here. I mean, you either go out to eat or you go to a sports game.
Well, and I actually disagree with you, Wes.
Go to comedy.
I think that the artistic community
music.
Is growing. I think that people don't know about it nearly enough. But yeah, My Bloody Valentine. We should definitely check that out if you have the opportunity. We're going to be there. Me and my girlfriend Tabitha will be there.
Me and whoever I drag with me will be there.
Cheryl's probably going to have a date.
Well, I tell you, one of the best things that you can do is let me know that you're on the way, and so I can tell all the little ghouls and actors your name. And then that takes it a whole nother level when you're inside the haunted house and they start going, Cheryl, Cheryl, stay with us, Cheryl. It's really, really fun.
And I'll be like, I'm coming, my minions.
When we went through your haunted house, we went through with Tabitha and her family, my girlfriend's family, and their neighbor, who I thought Tabitha was behind me holding my shirt, like pulling it back and choking me with my shirt.
Kind of like every Saturday night.
And I looked back, and it wasn't even Tabitha. It was her parents' neighbor. I was like, Kathy, get off me. What are you doing? You're not allowed to hold me like that.
You know, it's just so fun, and everybody thinks they know how they're going to react when they go in. They don't have any idea, man. They don't have any
idea. Yeah, I had no clue.
Yeah, it's a different kind of thing.
Very fun, though, so y'all should definitely check that out.
So I had a party foul.
What'd you do?
It was my phone that beeped.
Yeah, during the... Come on, be a professional, Cheryl.
I'm sorry.
I mean, that should be the first thing that you look into.
Party foul.
Turn mine off, except nobody loves me.
Well, hey, we're...
Mine were probably just Tinder notifications.
Cheryl, it's okay. We're at about 25 minutes. We're going to take a break, smoke a cigarette, and we're going to whip Cheryl for letting her phone ding during a good story.
I'm going to get a good chastising, guys.
Right.
And then we'll be right back, so... talk this way.
No, you never go, Tabby, let's watch FX. You don't do that. You don't.
You're right. We don't have cable.
I'm loud all the time, so they have to tell me to quiet down.
Yeah, it was one of the problems that we had in our first episode was I'm real quiet, and Cheryl's like, hey, what's up? Let's party.
It's a drug test.
You know, I mean, I think you just got to, you know, you got to be real when you do this kind of stuff. And it's something that you learn because, you know, I've coached talent my whole life. I've coached 100 people, and a lot of them ended up in major markets and stuff like that.
Coach me.
Well, it's interesting, and this is what I'll tell you. And you know what? You can learn from it or you can't. But I have noticed that there is always the same learning curve with somebody. So say, back in the old days, it used to require 10, 14 people to run a radio station because you had somebody that had to work Sunday overnights and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I would be aware of voices like when I went to the supermarket and if you know, the little bagger kid said, you know, would you like paper or plastic? I'd go, hey, you know, you want to try radio or something like that? Okay, the point being is what I've noticed is you find somebody that has that little iota, that little grain, that little kernel of talent, and you put them on the radio, and then they go and they start acting like they think they should sound on the radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you add to that that we need them to talk about certain things in a natural manner. Okay. Ordinarily, these kids wouldn't talk about the great Taco Tuesday party or whatever the hell like that. But, you know, they've got to learn to talk about it in their own voice. So what you find is that you have to take people and do a complete 360 with them. You want them to sound like they sounded when you discovered them, but be able to convey the information that you give them in that natural delivery that you fell in love with.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, then I would be fucked because my thing is like, hey, guys, how's it going?
No, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that, man. I think that you have a character, and I think that that's a character that you need to stick with, and I think it works for you. So it's not the same thing.
Well, I don't always say that it's not a character, but it's like a heightened version of how I write my material.
That's, you know, because a character.
Character, call it what you will. But yeah, because there are times where I'll get real drunk and I'll just be up there just doing my regular, you know, speaking voice. And then there are times where I'll get up there and I'll be like, today I'm going to be real depressed and I'll do all of my jokes in a super sad tone.
But you know what? I know, you know, and that's the deal. If I was your manager, I would tell you, stick with the Hey Guys character and don't ever break that character. Don't be seen. Don't show your tattoos. Don't be shown with a cool beer. Always do things that play within that particular character because that's how people only get to know you for 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So you've got to keep it somewhat simple. You know, Cheryl's act currently, she's playing kind of this oversexed kind of a single girl kind of thing, right? Okay.
All day, every accurate day.
Accurate? Okay.
Yes.
She's definitely playing the oversexed part.
All right. Well, I don't care how funny of a joke you have about modern art or whatever, it's not going to work within this character because people only have a short period of time to get to know you.
Mm-hmm.
So you decide the character, you stick with the character, write those jokes within a character. And one of the greatest examples of this is, and I discuss this with comedians all the time, and it's one of the questions I've always asked them too, is, have you ever written a joke that didn't fit you, but you've given to somebody else and it worked really, really well?
Absolutely.
Okay, that means that you know what your character is, and you know what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
Because comedy is all subjective, and occasionally the best joke in the world will not work out of the wrong mouth, but right, out of the correct right mouth, it works 100% of the time.
Absolutely. Shout out J.J. Hal and Kendall Smith Rodriguez.
Yeah. And thanks for writing on me, guys. Like, I have like an Amy Schumer vibe to me. Like, that's who I go for. That's who I'm. I love it. And some people even tell me, they're like, oh, it's a little too this or it's a little too that. And I'm like, well, if you don't like it, it's just not for you.
Yeah.
No, I think that you, and once again, remember what I talked to you, what I said about the 360-degree character arc, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of coaching talent.
It all comes back to who you are.
To drink, right? Fuck Amy Schumer. I love Amy Schumer. She's the best.
Yeah, she's cool.
But you've got to be the best Cheryl character, because there are certain edges to you that are different than the edges of hers.
Oh, yeah.
And there are, and no matter how much you are alike, there are jokes that will work for you that won't work for her, and vice versa.
Yeah, and I just meant, like, as far as, like, the raunchiness.
The content. The content.
Yeah, the content. Is I kind of fall more
into not so much into the persona, but yeah.
Yeah, the raunchy girl, and then there's other comedians like Maria Bamford, who's just kind of like the quirky girl. Like,
right.
You know? And it's just, it works for her. It's awesome. It doesn't work for me.
You know, I mean, I understand that. I wouldn't, and it's interesting because I'm telling you, and it seems like I'm saying this out of both sides of my mouth. Number one, I think that you've got to stick with the character. But number two, don't limit yourself by saying, I'm the raunchy girl.
Yeah.
Right. Okay?
Now, you are Cheryl. These are Cheryl's jokes. These are Cheryl's experiences. At least...
Oh, no, they're all my experiences.
Well, and yeah, you wrote those from your experience.
Yeah. It's the heightened version of Cheryl, like Stephen was talking about the heightened version of Stephen. And I owe you guys a couple drinks.
Here we go. So...
I stammered a couple times.
So no,
you're good, you're
let's
good.
Talk a little bit about...
well, I'm still
your background in comedy, because I don't think a lot of people realize that you do have a background and that you used to associate with just like comedians. I mean, you still do, but
you mentioned it. You mentioned that you had some fun nights with some comedians that people would recognize.
You know, I've always just loved comedy, and it's kind of interesting too, because okay, here I'm a DJ and I've had so many opportunities. Is that dog going to shit over there? I'm just wondering, because that would be hilarious.
Yeah, okay, right. Hey, come on.
Go poo, dog.
Wow, and now the lights went weird.
Oh, no. This is the After Dark special.
Right, okay. All right, it's the Quiet Storm with Cheryl and Steven.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Yes, this is my sexy voice. Yes.
we were talking about, you know, comedy. I've had the opportunity to hang out with a lot of really, really big rock stars. And I got to tell you that in most... opportunities I've passed, but I have hung out with a lot of comedians, and I've really loved picking their brain. And you would think that ultimately I would have some kind of reason for this, like to try to get into comedy myself, but which I kind of am in a minor sense as a morning show DJ.
You have to be entertaining.
But I've picked the brains of everybody from Tommy Chong to Ralphie May to Bill Hicks to... actually had that son of a bitch, Bobcat Goldthwait. Bobcat Goldthwait stole material from me that ended up being in one of his specials. That is honest to God. Okay? That's
honest to God. Carlos Mencia that.
He really, really did. And I was shocked, because I would have thought, especially somebody who was at their peak at that time, would be above that. And I'm like, he just took the jokes I did on the morning show. He did them not only that night in concert, but he put them on an album.
That's insane.
Because he rocked them and kept rocking them. I think a lot of times that happens to people too, when they don't realize that, you know, it's something that they tried it once and they were like, oh, that's a good joke. I'm going to do it again next week. I'm going to do it again at the next show. And I think there's a lot of mistakes.
I'd be honored, but the guy was a fucking prick.
Oh, was he?
Oh, he was a fucking prick across the board.
It's different too. Like, I've had a joke like about pussy or whatever, and someone took it and kind of made it their own. It was a different thing though.
Right.
It wasn't what I did specifically. They took it like, oh, I'm gonna do this, because it's from a different perspective. It's from a male perspective as opposed to a female.
Well, that happens all the time too. Where I'll write a joke and I'll think, oh man, this premise. It came from Kendall Smith Rodriguez. Like, this is the exact same premise, but I took it in a different direction, and I'll even call him up. And it's a courtesy thing amongst comedians to be like, hey man, I wrote this joke. I'm gonna tell you this joke real quick over the phone. Is it cool if I tell this joke on stage?
Right.
And like, that's the only respectable way that you can go about doing that.
Right.
It's like, hey, I got this inspiration from you.
But you're never gonna be 100% correct, because, you know, and the word for it is synchronicity. Look at it this way. On a guitar, there's only so many frets. There's only so many possible combinations of things that could be played.
So that's why things sound a little
similar. As humans want to think that our experiences are infinite, but they're not. They're not. Somewhere down the line, there is somebody that has went through the exact same things that you guys have went through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy to think about.
Like, but someone else got their bed on fire, like I did.
So for people to write the same jokes is really not that unheard of.
No, and they're similar, but they're not exactly. I think the problem is when you get to, like, the verbatim part of it.
Right.
That you're like, hey, no, we talked about that, or you heard that from,
Well, and it's like even verbatim. Cheryl has a joke where she talks about,
with
R. Kelly, R. Kelly's song,
R. Kelly, yeah.
Where you say, my mind is telling me no, but my body is also telling me no. And like, I used to say that to this girl when we were dating all the time, because she'd be like trying to like touch on me, and I'd be like all drunk. I'd be like, dad, just get away.
Well, and
drunk, I don't want to touch you right
we
now.
We had that like moment too when I was on the Laugh Off. Like, I made a Milli Vanilli joke about Kendall, and like, at the same time, like, I had already written that, but at the same time, he posted something on Facebook about, like, Milli Vanilli and Kendall.
And someone had posted, like, you had posted a picture of him as the winner, and I was, like, looking like Milli and Vanilli's long-lost brother, right. Silly. And
but they were two completely different thoughts. They were on the same wavelength.
But it was just low-hanging fruit. He looked a lot like Milli and Vanilli. Like, it was just like, you guys.
He shaved his mustache.
Right, because of all the jokes that I sent Joe Cash, my favorite one was the one that I wrote about Kendall, and Cash didn't use that one. Cash used the one about Miguel. But my favorite joke about Kendall was, is he looks like something that you'd clean a baby bottle with.
Yeah, he does.
You know, you can relate, yeah.
My favorite one about him is he looks like a palm tree that just died. Like,
so
shout out Kendall Smith Rodriguez.
Shout out Kendall. We love you. You were our first guest.
So anyways, you know, we were talking about experiences with comedians. You know, there was that. And then for a long time, my best friend was a guy by the name of Captain Rowdy. And around these parts, Captain Rowdy was the guy. I mean, the guy. He sold out Depot Warehouse. He sold out Froggy Bottoms every single time, blah, blah, blah. And he had, he eventually caught diabetes. He had some problems, blah, blah, blah. And we would talk to each other for hours on end, 2-3 nights a week. And we would talk about comedy and jokes and things like that. So, and Scott Kennedy to another degree, you know, Scotty had a lot of videos on YouTube and stuff. The other day, one of you guys passed him along, you know, and I hung out with these guys a lot in clubs and bars and stuff. And I've just always found it fascinating. And once again, and it's so interesting because everything does come back 360 degrees. We started this conversation about the haunted houses. You guys may have noticed, or you probably didn't notice, that every time you scream in a haunted house, right after, you laugh.
Because you're like, oh, I'm stupid.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Because so, that's what you're there for.
So, oh, yeah, duh.
I am doing my own form of what you guys do to a small degree.
Well, yeah, and it's like I said, it's the highest art. You have a masterpiece over there where people come in, and that's what you want out of art, is to invoke emotion out of people and to have an experience where they talk about it.
And that's like what really art just boils down to. Because someone asked me, they were like, well, I'm a tattoo artist. Can I be on your... I'm like, yeah, that's an art form. Like, yeah,
that's an even so cooler one because it sticks though, forever.
That word doesn't seem right.
Art?
Yeah. I don't
Should
know
it be
why.
Like intellectual property?
It's
creative
little,
intellectual
I mean, it is.
Property?
It's very all-encompassing. But, you know, I think a chef is an artist.
Yeah.
A dancer is an artist.
You know, and what's funny is I totally agree with you, but it just sounds
a hairdresser
odd applied
is an artist.
To what we do.
As
you know, even though we have makeup artists and we have set design artists, we have all these things, it does seem weird applied to what I do. And I basically do, you know, huge set pieces is what I do. And then I bring in real artists.
Walking through your, y'all had the 3D glasses with all of the clowns scaring the shit out of you.
Right.
I love clowns.
That was art. I mean, every single piece of that, it all boils down to.
It was an art experience. This is my definition of art. Art is something that comes from within. You put your heart into it. You put your soul into it. and then you put it out there for the general public.
Something to be seen or felt.
And whether it's a statue, whether it's a book, whether it's music, whether it's comedy, whether it's a radio show, you've put your heart, you've put your creativity, you've put your intelligence into the thing that you are now sharing for the general public.
I find that interesting. The word still makes me weird, but you know, I have tried to distill it in my mind, and the way I've distilled it down in my mind is I just like making people happy.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of art is.
You know, and whether that's art or not.
No, that is art.
It's pretty interesting.
Because, and
we've always been very supportive of us as artists.
Yeah.
And
well, that's a whole different thing.
But I think you have a good feel for what is art and what makes good art. And so you have a lot of insight for people like me. I mean, I've met you 3 years ago, maybe, and I think you're one of the biggest local influences that I've ever had, because you give me good insight on what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong, you know, what I could do to be better. And it's just advice, you know, and you can take it or leave it.
I understand that, but couching it in these particular terms of art seems weird because I don't know.
Well, there's so many genres as well.
Right. Art is just such a big word.
It is. But that's the reason why you're here.
It makes you want to think that what you're doing may be a little more important than anything else.
No, not that it's important than anything else, but that it is something that could be of value to other people.
Well, I understand that. But the fact of the matter is if you look at that, then what I do is better than art.
Yeah.
I would say that, and I can't even be modest in that area, because when some people look at a painting, they're going to go, or they're going to love it, or they're going to hate it, whatever.
Yeah.
But when they come into my haunted house, they are 100% going to have some kind of extreme reaction.
Yeah.
I've made sure of that. Even if you cannot get scared, when you come through my vortex tunnel, you're going to get woozy.
Perception altered.
Right. So I am going to affect you emotionally on some level. And usually, 999.99% of the time, I hope my math's correct, it is going to be in a positive way.
I'm
going to
check your math later.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I started out as a painter. And not a painter in the sense of like a canvas and like brush painter.
Drawing.
No, I started out, I would go out and paint on people's walls and paint on trains.
Oh, he was a graffiti artist.
When I was 15 when I was 15 years old, I picked up a can of spray paint and I was like, let's start writing our names on shit.
You're a goddamn hoodlum.
I was, and I still kind of am. But I've grown and I focus on trying to not vandalize people's shit, obviously, now. But the whole point of that was to give someone an experience. It's like, yeah, sure, someone's going to paint over that. But the people who see it will look at it and go, how? How did he get up so high? How did he get up on that billboard and paint his name up there? Like, how was he doing that?
Were you really doing it for the artistic value, or were you just doing it out of boredom?
Maybe a little bit of both.
Because
I
pulled some of that shit myself, and I was just doing it because it was like, fuck all, there's nothing to do.
Well, no, I really wanted it to be an experience for people. I've painted for 13 years. I've been painting, and I've only ever had 2 gallery shows. And I don't like doing gallery shows.
I had no idea you were a painter.
They seem very impersonable.
Oh,
like
you're
they're.
Learning about
I like
each
to
other.
Have. I like for it to be an experience of like this person saw this in person, and they got to experience it and form an emotional or just anything about it. They got to see it for the first time, and that's it. I don't like to post my paintings on social media where you can look at a picture of the painting. I want you to see it in person if you're going to look at it. And that's what you're doing. Well, you're making this experience. It's an art experience of like, hey, let's go. Let's look at this stuff. Let's have an emotional reaction to it. And that's exactly what I would define art as. You are an artist.
You are a savant.
You draw dicks, don't you?
Mostly.
Yeah, lots and lots of peni.
They all have your face on them.
Yeah, probably. My face isn't that far from a dick.
It just
I
looks
got
like
wrinkles here, balls
it's,
up here.
It's just you, but with a little helmet. A little.
You just need a little hole at the top.
A little helmet with a hole in the top.
Trust me, I had one last week from my razor.
Oh, you know. Wow.
Yep.
Well, so, yeah, and that's another thing about you is you told me recently that you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go up and do your radio show?
It's been insane lately.
Oh, wow.
You know, you discussed the radio stations that I'm on here, but I'm also on a couple radio stations out of town. And that's like taking on part-time jobs, you know what I mean? When you do that. And so I have to get up early to do those. And I guess it's an old guy dude thing, you know, that I just don't need as much sleep as I used to. So I'll crash out between 7 and 8 and get up around 2, 2.30. The other night I got up around midnight. And I don't have insomnia. I don't have problems going to sleep, man. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I could say right now, man. You can put me in the back of your car and I go to sleep immediately. I stay tired.
He's a big West baby.
Right, exactly. 100%. But I do get up very early and I do these, I do a lot of show prep. I do about an hour and a half of show prep, you know, to see what's going on in the world and stuff like that. And mentally write a few jokes and stuff like that and knock out these shows and do it.
And when you're doing radio is like, do you record the whole show like in advance and then kind of splice music in between those bits, or do you actually sit there in the morning?
It depends on the day, but generally what we do is, you know, generally what our current process is we record the early morning hours the day before, and then we record the latter hours the morning of, and then I come in and record a third time with like current temperatures and current events, like, hey, there's a wreck on the loop and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's interesting in that, you know, when people hear the word pre-recorded, they think that it's some kind of sin or it's not whatever. But lots of the stuff I record was recorded 30 seconds before it went on air.
Right.
Okay, what's the difference?
Everybody's going to hear this in 2 weeks.
No,
so.
But yeah. There is a big difference because you do have like that little thing in the cloud that says like you can't say da da da. Like you can't really do live radio, I don't feel anymore, because someone will call in or something it's like bleep 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 bleep.
I can do it in a minute.
You know, I love live radio, and the other day I was trying to call into a radio station that isn't your radio station so I can talk shit about them, because you talked about how if they're new DJs, they're usually pretty polished, and this radio station has not had that for a long time. But
you were listening to anything else other than FMX.
Well, one of the hosts, we were just driving down the loop and I was in the passenger seat, and one of the hosts was talking about the beef between Cat Williams and Kevin Hart, and Cat Williams was saying, I'll put $1 million up on each one of the events. I'll battle rap you. I'll play you in basketball. I'll box you. And I'll out comedy you. And then something else. But they're both midgets, so I'm sure it was like wrestling or something. I don't know. But I wanted to call in and be like, that would be the funniest thing. And I couldn't get through on the line. But I think absolutely Cat Williams and Kevin Hart should battle really hard.
Sidebar. Wes, we'll get back to you. Sidebar on the Cat Williams like thing. The whole thing started because of what Cat Williams said about Tiffany Haddish. And then Tiffany's been in a couple of Kevin's days, and now Kevin, and it's like a pissing contest between the two. And it's just like, why won't you guys just let people be? But then Tiffany totally bombed a whole like big arena set because she wasn't prepared.
It happens.
I don't even know who the fuck this is. I know everybody.
Tiffany Haddish, Kevin Hart, Cat Williams.
Well, I know Kevin Hart, and I know Cat Williams. Cat Williams is not for me.
Yeah, he's not for me.
You know what? I'm not going to say overrated, because you know what? It's not for me. He makes millions and millions of dollars. He's probably really funny to a specific audience, but I think that his character sucks.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, and just
you're not into the 411 pimp.
Some of Cat Williams' stuff, but some of it I don't. And it's just like that whole thing. My comedy may not be for you. Your comedy may not be for me.
Right.
Like, it's not. You're trying to find your niche in the market. But he went out and said some stuff about. And here's my thing. I was like, okay, every single three of you have one thing in common. You're all African American. Y'all need to support each other, not tear each other down.
Well,
I agree.
There's that. But is Tiffany Haddish a comedian?
Yes.
She's been in films. She started comedian, but then she kind of went into films. And Cat Williams was just saying, like, oh, well, she's not really a comedian. She's an actress.
Yeah, but he was just dogging on her.
She started as a comedian.
That's, you know, that's pointless to do that. You know,
it is. It's ridiculous.
But he also said that he wanted to box with Kevin Hart. And I think that would be so adorable to see them with those big old gloves on, but trying
Kevin
to pick them up. They're so little, and it
Kevin
would be just.
Kevin Hart is a badass. Like, his gym, like, he's on the Rock level with his gym stuff that he posts.
Well, but
like,
then
have
they also
seen him work out?
He also
Cat
wants to
Williams
do basketball.
Would die in like 2 minutes.
Well, but Cat Williams and Kevin Hart in basketball, like, they'd have to use the little plastic Fisher Price basketball goals. It would be so cute.
Yeah.
I just think it would be really cute. I don't know.
Okay, so let's get back to Wes.
Well, you don't have to get back to me. I mean,
no, we're going to get back to you.
We can talk about obscure pop culture references all day long.
No, that you don't understand. I mean, you're here for us.
Well, no. I mean, no, I find this kind of thing actually fascinating, you know. And it's like if you ask me who's the best comedian ever, I would say there's no answer to that. Because each of us relate to different people.
Well,
but I have watched a bazillion hours of comedy. I mean, I think you guys know what a student of comedy I am based on the questions I ask comedians.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Never fucking heard of Tiffany Haddish.
Okay, that's true.
She's new. She's new.
Well, then I guess that means you're on Team Cat Williams, which is what team I'm on. That's
okay.
That's irrelevant. But
so, Wes, you were talking about being in other markets besides FMX. What other markets are you in?
Casper, Wyoming, and Abilene. You could literally drive from, you know, I guess that would be the Northwest, all the way through Dallas and listen to me all day long if you were, I don't know.
Inclined to
do so. A super fan. Yeah.
Inclined, yeah, or a super fan.
Yeah, which we are. We are super fans.
That's not going to last much longer, but I was helping a friend out in Casper, Wyoming. He asked for a little help. He lost a DJ, so I thought I was going to be doing it for about 2 weeks, and it's been about a year and a half.
Damn.
Right on.
Well, good friend. Wes is a good friend.
We're getting pretty close to the end here, and we did talk about comedians, and it's impossible to say who is the best, but what are your top five? If you could name just even
for
top three, just name some of your favorite comedians.
Oh, God.
It doesn't have to be limited.
I don't know that I can enumerate like that, but I can give you some general thoughts.
It doesn't have to be limited to a number. Just tell us some of your favorite comedians.
Here's the craziest thing. There has only been one comedy show where I had to leave because I was laughing so hard that I got a headache and I literally couldn't take it. I was like a boxer. I was like a boxer that had been punched too many times. There's only been one, and you're not gonna believe who it was. Sinbad.
Oh, okay.
Shout out
Sinbad. Sinbad at the Memorial Auditorium. Myself and my wife had to leave. We could not take it anymore. We were punch drunk and our heads hurt from all the laughter.
He's one of those people who's known for doing comedy just off the cuff, though, and just talking about things that he thinks is funny.
Yeah.
So you're not, like, writing them all down or anything.
And you can catch him on the new TV show called Rel. He plays the father.
Lil Rel, I'm assuming, is also in the show.
Lil Rel, yeah.
The guy is just plain good.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned to you guys before the show that, you know, I'd hung out with Bill Hicks quite a bit and stuff. Bill was really, really, really incredibly ahead of his time. He was more edgy, even more edgy than Carlin, but he did not have enough time to on this earth to build up the catalog or the accolades that Carlin did. Carlin's, of course, one of my favorites, Cheech and Chong.
Love Cheech and Chong!
Loved it because there is and their comedy is a little bit of a base level, but even when I was a little kid, which I told you guys I listened to their albums before on the pre-show, I didn't really understand the concept of getting stoned when I heard their first albums. I didn't know what it meant. I just knew that these guys were being funny and goofy, you know, and they were pretending that one was a nun and one was a cop, and it was funny. So I love them. It was kind of interesting that I had a bias against Ralphie May because a friend of mine booked him at a comedy club in his early days.
Early.
And in his early days, he did have a little bit of a reputation for borrowing.
Oh, okay.
And he actually got put on the spot in my friend's comedy club, and he quit it. He quit borrowing. And when he quit borrowing, he became so great. And Ralphie May would come into the radio station, and you could tell that he went to bed an hour before he got there. But he would joke for 3.5 hours, and it was just relentless. Just absolutely relentless how funny he was. It was just fantastic.
I have a question about Ralphie. Is he gone now?
Yeah.
He is?
Okay. If you mean dead, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he died. He
passed away. Because I remember liking a lot of his stuff, and then it was just like it kind of fell off. But
yeah, your comedy really falls off when you die.
It's kind of interesting. You know,
off the cliff.
He kind of tried to do this white hip-hop thing, and whenever he went in that direction, I didn't necessarily care for him. But when he just told straight-up stories about being a white guy in the world, and that's what it was, because evidently he was a lot like me, surrounded by a lot of ethnicities. Mm-hmm. His stories were just absolutely amazing.
Well, especially being a big guy like he was too. He had that always, it's kind of a jolly thing that big comedians have, where they talk about how they're fat and it's funny. It's always funny.
And I think like a lot of comedy, or even mine, like, it's a defense mechanism against the world. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, because it's just like, I'm going to hit you before you hit me.
Yeah.
Right.
I already
got jokes about me before you even have jokes
about me.
Yeah,
it's like being in a rap battle by yourself. It's exactly. Like, I better talk shit about myself real quick so that everybody knows where I'm coming from.
And then there's like, oh, I've diffused the situation. Now we can move on to
friends.
Yeah,
and we can talk about jokes.
I kind of think, I agree with the world in that the best of the best ever was Richard Pryor. Red Fox was really, really good. Once again, that goes back to the story I told you before we went on air about the people at my dad's work sending home ethnic albums and stuff. I would listen to Red Fox albums that weren't even released to the general public on weird-ass Laugh Records or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's what's up. That's cool
as
fuck.
That's like backdoor shit.
It really, really was, you know, when you're just a little kid and Red Fox is saying, you better wash your ass, you know, it's just... It's like I'm saying this when I'm 7 years old. It was hilarious.
Well, it's weird how that comes back, though. I mean, Kendrick Lamar has a whole song about that now.
Wash your ass.
Wash your ass. But
that's
all
a Red Fox reference, man. He was the first one to do that. You know, I don't know who else. I actually pretty much like everybody out there. I really, really like the fact that Brian Regan.
Mm-hmm. Brian Regan's a modern one, yeah.
I like the fact that he has the ability to be so hilarious and be clean at the same time.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do.
I love dirty comedians. I do. I really, really do. I don't have any problem with it. But it's just like you're funny in column A or you're funny in column B, and I really, really like his stuff.
Well, it's hard to not be. It's hard to not be. It's hard for me to be dirty in the opposite sense. Like sometimes it's just the style of writing. I can't write dirty jokes. She can't write clean jokes.
Right.
But it's one of those things where you find how it works, and then you kind of you try and jump over into
the
other
lane.
There's
some of your jokes that are dirty. They're just innuendo dirty.
Every once in a while, but yeah, tendency to be clean.
Here's where I spoil my credibility, but on another level where I keep my credibility. One of my favorite comedians was, I think that he has taken a bad turn, but one of my favorite comedians was Rodney Carrington. Rodney Carrington was absolutely amazing. He has taken a little bit of a conservative agenda, which I do believe that celebrities and people like that do deserve an opinion in the national discourse on what's going on in this world. But you don't sing a song about your penis and then tell me why Trump is good. It just it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It takes him out of his character that we know and love. But my wife and myself have seen Rodney Carrington probably a dozen times. Last time I saw him, I spilled whiskey all over his tour bus.
Nice.
I was like, one of the most embarrassing things ever, but I was a little wasted.
Wait, hold on. That's a great list. But we're getting towards the end of our 1 hour podcast that we always record. And I hate to cut you off, but we do a little thing. It's a toast.
It's like a chicken wing.
But it's a roast and toast.
Oh,
where you are allowed to roast both of the hosts,
but
also
you have to toast them.
You have to toast. So you can say something mean, but you have to say something nice. So if you can't say something nice, you don't have to say something mean.
Remember my Cheryl Pittman joke? Oh.
I'm very forgettable, guys.
Oh, okay.
I am not forgettable in bed.
Cheryl Pittman's got more name than jokes.
Ha!
How about that?
Oh, yeah, because it used to be Cheryl Pittman Hernandez.
Right.
Yeah.
Stephen Feldman claims to be Hispanic Jewish, but I think he's just a Jew they left in the oven too long.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh,
I've been waiting a while for that.
Cheers.
Stephen Feldman.
Toast.
Stephen Feldman. Okay, now we're talking positive things right here, and this is the point where in the end of the conversation, end of the night, it's the I love you, bro thing.
Yeah.
I actually think that Stephen Feldman, this is honest to God, has the best possible chance of breaking out of this scene onto a national scene. Okay? Now,
thank you.
In order to say this, I've got to talk about other comedians. There are people who are more consistently funny, but Stephen is more willing to take the big chances that it takes to get noticed, to break out, and to be something incredibly special.
Thank you.
That's what I would say.
Well, so, that means a lot, man. I appreciate
all
that.
All right.
Yeah, Cheryl. So lovey.
Okay, as far as Cheryl goes, I've only seen Cheryl's act once. But what I know about Cheryl is that she basically jumped up off the bench and said, I could do this, and started doing it in record time. And if there is one thing that I really, really stand for, it is the just do it mantra. And I hate to do it with Nike, but that, but that is the best way to put it in the to put it in succinct terms. To be able to dedicate yourself and say, I'm going to do this, and then be somewhat successful at it. You know, yeah. I mean,
hey, my star is still rising.
No one can say, well, with comedy, like we said, it's subjective. No one can say, but whatever. But to go from where you started to already doing World of Beer performances is huge.
Thank you.
Well, and yeah, I mean,
most people would have taken another year or two before they jumped up.
To put that into perspective, Cheryl's been doing comedy for a few months now.
5 months.
5 months now. And she is already competing on the level of comedians who have been doing it for 5 years, 4 years, 3 years.
That's what I was trying to say, but the beer got in my mouth.
But I'm just trying to put that into perspective for people who don't know us, who are listening on the podcast. Cheryl took the ball and ran with it.
I'm going balls to the wall with this whole thing.
So yeah, I completely agree. And cheers once again.
Cheers.
You can also do any plugs that you want to do real quick if
we
you've
like
got
plugs.
Any.
You know what? I've got all these plugs. I've got all these things going on. But the thing that I would tell you most is go out and see some local comedy and some local comedians. Because just like Nightmare on 19th Street, you go out there and you say, I can't believe this is in Lubbock. The comedy scene is the same thing. You go, I can't believe this is in Lubbock.
It's a jewel in the rough, or a diamond in the rough.
Because this is not what Lubbock's known for. Lubbock is known for B-level sports.
Cotton fields,
dust, and rock stars that we secretly hate love. Both.
And also racism.
Bit of racism, but the comedy scene is incredible,
and the music scene is amazing as well.
No, it's not. You know, people in Lubbock love to say
that. I love
that.
Wes,
and I hate to come out. You know what? This is probably the worst thing I'll say on this podcast. The music scene here is not that good.
All right.
I mean, no, it's not really any better than any other place. Think of how many venues host music here.
Yeah.
Think of how many local artists you can name. Okay? You're on par with any other town. This whole thing about Lubbock music being something special is bullshit. We've had two artists that have really broke out of this scene, and we've disowned both of them. Buddy Holly and Natalie Maines.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
Town,
no, I can't. I can't get behind the whole Natalie Maines thing. That was so wrong.
Yeah. They've shit all over their musicians in this town, and it's embarrassing.
But
well,
I will
Cheryl?
Say that you were talking about the comedy scene and everything that goes on with the comedy scene. So if you live in Lubbock or even the surrounding towns, please follow us on Laugh Hub City. You can see all of our upcoming shows, where we're going to be, when we're going to be there.
That's
times.
On Facebook.
It's on Facebook. It's on Instagram. It's on Twitter. Laugh Hub City. And follow us on the Drunk Tank podcast.
Which is what you're listening to now, so that's kind of...
Yeah, so you should... But follow us on Facebook. We're going to set up a YouTube channel.
It's all one word. That's a hard thing about our podcast is it's the Drunk Tank Podcast, but all one word, like a drunk person was trying to spell it.
Exactly, because I was drunk.
Like a capital K in the middle.
No, it's all... No, it's all one word.
Lowercase.
But also, if you want to catch Wes and you want to catch us, we'll be at World of Beer in Lubbock, Texas on the 18th of January at 9 p.m. We also do our weekly open mics at Schooners from 9 to 1. It's an open mic revival where it's comedy and music. We do our weekly pure comedy open mic at
the Lantern Tavern
every Wednesday at 10 o'clock. And then Savage Tavern every Thursday. We take turns between doing comedy and...
throwing rocks.
Trivia.
Comedy trivia.
No, not throwing rocks through the window. Do not throw rocks through the window, please. It's trivia.
Oh, the Great Wall.
Oh, yeah. The Great Wall. Do your joke.
The shit door.
Oh.
Alrighty. Well, that's it for us tonight. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it, guys. We love you, and good night.
Cheers.
Cheers.